Based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead making sure that the fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to The Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome in to another episode of The Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross, brought to you by Rotoballer. This is episode 274. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross. And with me, as usual, is my 80 gray co-host, Mr. Chris Clay. Chris, how's it going, bud?
Another good day to talk baseball. And we're in February. We're almost to the start of spring training. So before you know it, we'll have actual baseball to talk about, which is quite exciting. So, yeah, cannot complain at all. And I'm just looking forward to having baseball back, man. We are almost there.
Yes, the off season is almost over. Pitchers and catchers report, and about a week now. We got, or maybe a little under a week, 5-6 days, and spring training games I think are in 2 weeks to the day. At least on today, on Thursday. So, a lot of baseball upcoming. Gotta love it. And we had a fun topic today. It's an episode we did last year around this time. It's talking some post hype guys. You know, we've been talking, you know, obviously, the last 2 months or so about our top prospect rankings, each position, dynasty rankings, etc. Some redraft prospects sprinkled in. But now we're going to get over to the post-hype guys, some players that their major league career or even some that are still prospects that haven't really panned out so far. And I guess discuss if we are, you know, still in on them, to what degree, if we'd buy low, if we're kind of fading at this point. We have 10 pretty intriguing names here, good mix of players. These are all hitters. We will do a pitcher version and another episode either next week or the week after. Before we get into the show, and the usual housekeeping, you can follow us on Twitter. I'm EricCross04. Chris at RotoClegg. Show is at Toolshed Pod. Please drop that 5-star rating and review. We greatly appreciate that. Make sure you check out both of our personal sites, ToolshedFantasy.com and TheDynastyDugout.com for all of our rankings, a lot of other content on both of those sites. And, of course, check out all the great stuff RotoBaller has to offer. Use code TOOLSHED to get 10% off any premium package across any sport. And so many great articles, podcasts, tools, a lot of good stuff to help you win your leagues this season. All right, Chris, first name on the outline, Miguel Vargas, who maybe turns into their new Michael Bush, the guy that's languishing in AAA because they don't really have an open spot for him, though he at least did get a shot, much more than Michael Bush ever got with the team. Now, he got a little bit of a cup of coffee in 2022 and then played about half the season, actually exactly half the season, 81 games, with the Dodgers in 2023, but did not do well at all. Let's just say that. 195, 305, 367 slash line, 15 doubles, 7 home runs, 3 steals. You know, didn't strike out a lot. K rate was almost 20% on the nose. Walked at a pretty good clip as well. So at least that was still going for him, but that was basically it. And now Gavin Lux has returned. You know, Mookie Betts shifted to the infield. Obviously, they got Freddie Freeman. I don't know where Miguel Vargas fits in now, but I think I would still buy low. I think he's better than what he showed, obviously. And like, look, this is one of the better pure hitters in the minor leagues. Like, you don't hit 310 over 470 minor league games out of luck. Is he going to be a stud? No. To be overrank him? Probably. But given how low the cost has sunk right now, I think he's still a decent little buy just because it's basically dirt cheap to acquire him.
So he's interesting. I was chatting about him with somebody. It was yesterday, actually. And what a perfect fit for the beginning of the show, talking post-hype hitters. Because at one point, Miguel Vargas was considered a top 10 prospect in most fantasy circles. He, big frame, very athletic, hit for average, put some speed up, had some pop. Pretty much did it all. I mean, between 2021 and 2022, we were looking at a hitter that consistently hit over 300 at every stop. His lowest batting average at any of the stops was AAA in 2022, which he hit 304. He also got on base over 400 clip, which is pretty impressive. He walked as much as he struck out. He hit 17 home runs, then that stint with 16 stolen bases. In 2021, he had hit 23 homers, and he stole 11 bases. So Vargas was always somebody that hit for decent power. Like, he wasn't like a huge power projection by any means, but like an average power projection. He was a sneaky good athlete that was aggressive on the base paths, and he made it work, and he had a good hit tool. So then, obviously, felt like he was a little slow played. It debuted in 2022, and it wasn't great, but it was a small sample, so everybody's like, okay, we'll see what he's got. Last year, he got a chance in the majors. He had 304 plate appearances, but it wasn't consistent playing time, and it wasn't pretty. He hit 195, but he had a 305 OBP, hit 7 home runs, stole 3 bases. This kind of feels very similar to the Gavin Lux situation. When Lux first came up, they never really gave Lux the consistent playing time that he needed, and then he faltered because he just didn't play every day. Vargas, I think the expectations probably were a little high. I was guilty of ranking him too high at one point.
Same. Like,
looking back, let's see, preseason, just looking where I had, because we were just looking at old prospect rankings and chatting about this. Preseason of 2022, I had him 40th. I feel like he moved up pretty quickly during 2022. And yeah, by midseason, July 2022, had him up to 11. So, yeah, that I was too high. I think all of us were a little high on him, if we're honest with ourselves. But I don't think he's as bad as he's shown, as you mentioned. I think there's still a lot to like with Vargas. Obviously, he's not going to be an elite home run hitter. But what he does do is make a lot of contact. He's going to get on base at a very high clip, as he showed even last year in a down major league season. And he's just 24 years old. So he just turned 24 this offseason. So he spent all last year 23. He'll be 24 this entire year. So I think that in the right situation, he's a bounce back. Maybe he gets traded, because right now, where does he play? I think that's the biggest question mark that we need answered, is where does he fit into this situation? Currently, nowhere. Like you mentioned, AAA, unfortunately. I'm hoping that maybe he gets traded to a team that could play him every day. We'll see if that happens. For now, it's a really tough buy for me just because of that, but he's not going to cost you anything. So if you have a deeper bench in your dynasty league and can afford to buy him, then sure, why not?
Yeah, that's where I am. And it's actually weird because our ranking kind of progression with Vargas was very similar. So pre-2022, I had him 40th. Mid-2022, July, he jumped up to 15. September of 2022, up to 11. January of 23, 12th. February of 23, 12th. April 2023, also 12. And then he got off the list before my May update. So, yeah, I was basically right there in line with where you had him. And, yeah, we weren't the only ones, obviously. There was a lot of people that are in on Vargas. I think more were in than out. But, yeah, it's weird with him because it's such an interesting profile. Like you mentioned, like there's the hit tool first. And there's some power, but it wasn't like he was projected to be a big power speed guy. So everything was riding on that hit tool, or at least for the most part. Like you needed him to hit for 280 plus because he wasn't going to hit 30 home runs, wasn't going to steal 20 bags. And at this point, yeah, I think the price has dropped so much where I think he's a decent buy. But again, I wouldn't give up a lot to get him, but I don't think you have to either. So next one here, Brett Beatty, another guy that's, again, this is a common theme here. We probably went too high on these guys as an industry, and especially with you and I. Brett Beatty, let's see, I'm February 2023 right now. I had Brett Beatty, though I never went as high on Beatty as I did with Vargas. February 2023, Brett Beatty was 54. And I think he might have topped out maybe in the 40s or 30s for me. I don't think I ever went like top 25 with him. But he has just struggled, obviously, in his various stints with the Mets right now. And until the Mauricio injury, it was looking like Beatty was to be doing the same thing Vargas was going to be doing and chilling on AAA for a bit. But last year, in 389 plate appearances, slash 212, 275, 323, 9 home runs. Walk rate was a little bit below league average. K rate wasn't bad. It was about 26%, but not really showing the profile that we saw, Chris, out in Arizona, and I saw some in AA as well. And you saw him in high A, right? Didn't you see him in high A or low A?
Yep.
High A, that's right, yes. But you look at some of the metrics. Average EV is still pretty solid, 89.5 last year. Hard hit rate, 44%. So you still got that going for him, but hitting a lot of those into the ground. That's the thing. But I think he's going to get a shot this year. Still only 24. I'm feeling similar to the Vargas. Like I still think there's something there. With Beatty, obviously, hitting ground balls has always been an issue for him, getting back to the minor leagues. So that's a long-standing issue that's going to need to be tweaked, and that's easier said than done. And maybe trim the K rate a little bit. He's always been a little bit of a free swinger. But I think there's still 25 homer pop and maybe a 250-ish hitter here that gives you a handful of steals as well, best-case scenario. So, yeah, I'm similar to Vargas. Cost has sunk so low, I'm okay buying right now.
I actually like buying Brett Beatty a decent bit here. I think there's just one fatal flaw with Beatty. It's just the amount of ground balls that he hits, which pounds the ball into the ground. He does post good exit velocities. He hits the ball hard. The barrel rate's just lower because he doesn't lift well at all. And that's something that's going to have to change. Both MLB seasons that he's been up, he's put ground ball rates over 50% of the time. So that's concerning in that aspect. But I will say, what we've seen from Beatty, I don't think fully reminiscent of who he is. I think that seeing him in the minors, seeing him in the AFL, he was the best player in the AFL in 2022, in my opinion. He was stellar. So I think that, or was it 2021 that he was? I can't even keep up with the years at this point.
It was 20. When was he there? I don't think it was 2020. I think it was 2022.
Either way, he showed such good skills. And that really stood out to me. I still believe in this profile being a solid OBP type. You know, he hasn't really shown the high walk rates yet in the majors, but I still believe that he can show that kind of profile. And that's what he profiled as a prospect. He would hit for some pop. He was going to get on base at a high clip. Like he consistently post high walk rates. And he did it in AAA last year. And the crazy thing is, in 121 AAA plate appearances last season, he hit 10 home runs.
Yeah.
And he got on base at a 388 clip. I firmly believe that that player is still somewhere in there. We're talking 431 MLB plate appearances for Brett Beatty's career. So I don't think it's a fair shake to say that he's completely done. But ultimately, he's going to have to get more loft in that swing. That's really the biggest thing. He also was dealing with a groin injury last year. Have to wonder, like, how long did that bother him? I don't know. We don't know. But hopefully, with a chance to play every day, with less pressure, like, I don't see the Mets as going in like they were last year as a contender. Hopefully, he can just play free, be himself, and perform. So I do lie in Brett Beatty.
Yeah, absolutely do. I think I do lean more towards, if I had to pick between Vargas and Beatty right now, I think I would lean Brett Beatty. But that ground ball issue, like we mentioned, it's been a long-standing issue. I remember seeing him, and I just looked, it was 2021 when he was on the AFL. And when I saw him in 2022, or was it 2021? Maybe it was both years. He was in double-A both parts of both those seasons. I might have seen him both times because Portland plays Binghamton a good amount. He was just line drive. The launch angle wasn't there. So this is like a few years of this kind of batted ball profile. And like I said, it's easier. Like we say it a lot that like, oh, if he gets the launch angle up and yeah, it's great. And it'd be great if he did, but it's not like it's a easy tweak to make. This is definitely an approach change. So we'll see if he can. I hope he can, because like I said, I think there's still a pretty solid, maybe a fantasy corner infield profile in here. We shall see. Sticking with these corner infielders here, let's go with Jose Miranda of the Minnesota Twins. This is one where I'm not quite as confident in Miranda as I would with Beatty. Obviously, he plays one of the corners. Royce Lewis has emerged as the Twins' third baseman of the future, health permitting, which obviously is a big thing with Royce right now. And they have 412 other guys that can play first base. They even brought in Carlos Santana to add to the mix recently. Miranda, I'm lukewarm on Miranda. I'm not as confident here as I was with the previous two names here, Chris. But what are your thoughts on him?
Yeah, he's interesting. I'm not really sure what to do with Miranda, because when you look at the profile, in a sense, he feels like a one-hit wonder to me, in a way where he exploded onto the scene in 2021, and it was like, wow, this dude might really be something. And it's been downhill from there. His 2022 MLB sample was not bad.
Yeah, he had
15
solid
home runs, 125 games, hit 270, which is fine. He was banged up last year. He didn't play much due to injury. And I don't know, like that shoulders typically are pretty bad for just hitters in general, even obviously pitchers too. But there was a recent report that I just discovered from Jeff Zimmerman, the Mining the News article that he does. And this was a report from a week ago, February 1st, that says Jose Miranda is not close to being able to contribute in the field, which is interesting. So it says after months of uncertainty and attempted rehabs, Miranda finally had scar tissue removed from his labrum and rotator cuff in an October 4th procedure. Miranda was given a timeline of 3 to 4 months and feels pretty good, quote, but currently Miranda is hitting off a machine and began to throw 2 weeks ago. So the fact that he's not back in the field or not ready to contribute in the field is a bit concerning. Obviously, with the trade of Jorge Polanco, they're are more open spots now, but there's obviously other players to fill those. The concerning thing is just the Twins are chock full of one similar profiles and two utility guys that can play all over the board. So we'll see what he looks like in spring training. Apparently, he cleaned up his swing mechanics a lot during this process. Carlos Correa reportedly was impressed with his swing. I don't know which way this goes, but Miranda, I'm not going to sit here and tell you he's a one-hit wonder of that 2021 season, because, like I said, 2022 was decent, and 2023 was lost to injury. But we probably use another one that was just went way too high on that crazy season in which he hit 30 home runs between double and triple A. So I don't think I'm buying back here. I'm more out than in, but I hope that we'll see him in spring training. We should see him when we're down there, near, because Twins are right down there. So that'd be neat if we got to see what he looks like and get a in-person look. So we'll see. I'm not fully buying.
Yeah, I'm not either. And they have another post-type guy who plays the same position and plays first base, Alex Kirilloff. He could have been a guy we could have thrown on this list as well. Looks like he's going to be ready for the start of the year, but maybe he's platooning at this point. It's hard to say. There's a few of these post-type guys on Minnesota, but yeah, I'm not fully out on Miranda, but again, just my confidence level is lower on him than it is with either Beatty or Miguel Vargas. Next name here, let's keep it in the American League Central, go over to the White Sox with Oscar Colas, a guy that who knows if he's going to be starting this year in the major leagues. He should, right? We'd imagine he would with how little options they have outside of Luis Robert, but he just hasn't looked good in his time with the White Sox. Last year hit 216, 257, 314. The power almost disappeared. Only five home runs in 75 games, Very aggressive, 12 walks to 71 Ks. Always been more of an aggressive hitter, but he made it work in the minor leagues, but didn't work in the major leagues. So are you willing to buy low on Oscar Colas right now, Chris?
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18-plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Man, Colas is a weird profile, too, from the standpoint of he's just for massive power. And I thought what he did in the minors was so impressive. Like, the underlying data pretty much, like, fully backed it consistently as a prospect. And then, I don't want to say the word, but, like, he's like a quad A guy in the majors. And, yeah, I'm not willing to say that yet. Like, I still think there's time for him to figure that out. But he's going to have to show some signs of life with the contact skills especially. And he's got to lift the ball, too. That's part of the problem. Like, you can hit the ball hard all day, but he's hyper-aggressive. He doesn't take a walk. Last year, he walked at a 4.6% clip, which is pretty concerning. He put the ball on the ground at a 51.5% rate. So those are concerning. Also, infield fly balls, really high. So while he does have decent exit velocity and raw power, it's, I don't know, the chase is pretty concerning here. According to a report a couple days ago, he's likely to begin the year in AAA Charlotte, which, not surprising, but you'd like to see what he can do in the majors. And obviously, he's going to get consistent playing time in the minors, try to work things out, hopefully get back on track. But the reality is that this White Sox team is not very good. And obviously, there are better players in the outfield. So you have Benintendi, if you want to call him one of their better players. He's in left.
I guess.
Mean, yeah, Luis Robert is in center. But if you can't beat out Dominic Fletcher in right field, then I think there's some deeper issues here. They've gone out and got Fletcher. They got Kevin Pillar. Like, these guys, you would think that Colas would take advantage. And he's only 25, so he's always going to play down in every OBP league just because he doesn't walk at a high clip. So you can count on that. He hits the ball hard, but like the chase and contact is just is a bit concerning. And then the quality of contact, you're just putting on the ground entirely too much. So I think I'm more out than in here. So I, especially if he's going to start the season in the minors, his value is going to tank in Dynasty. And I don't think this is a good time to buy at all.
Yeah, and it's very telling, too, when there was an opening, but then they go, and they've really acquired like four or five outfielders over the last few weeks, even. Like you mentioned, they traded for Dominic Fletcher. They traded for Deloach. They signed Kevin Pillar. They also signed Brett Phillips, Rafael Ortega. It's like all these kind of, they just have a bunch of meh outfielders now. So maybe that signals that they aren't internally high on Colas, but who knows what the White Sox are thinking. Sorry, Mike Carter, but who knows what that team is doing right now. But yeah, I know that's why there's a difference between game power and raw power, right? Like we've seen so many of these prospects. That's why we always grade the raw power and game power, or at least most sites do. And it's like the quality of contact metrics are still decent. And you look at this past year, barrel rate was around 8%. Hard hit rate around 40%. That's still fine, but when you're hitting that all into the ground, it doesn't mean crap. So, yeah, I'm similar to Miranda, not fully out, but yeah, I am also more out than him. Let's go to the other Chicago team here with the Chicago Cubs, and then a guy that is also getting blocked now. You know, recently acquiring Michael Busch. You know, maybe they signed Bellinger. That's still being bantered about, but Matt Mervis is falling out of favor there, it seems like, with the Cubs. But maybe it's a bit early for that because he only had 99 plate appearances. And yet he hit 167 with a 242 OBP, 289 slug. So yeah, they were bad 99 plate appearances, but the quality of contact was still there. 13.8% barrel rate, 50% hard hit rate, also struck out over 30% of the time. So is this the context goes with him? Like the ground ball rate, so it's not like super high. So it's not like a, that's the issue, but just well below average contact rates, well below average zone contact rate, too high of a whiff rate, swing and strike rate. Could still hit 30 over full here. I fully believe that. We've seen the power firsthand. I believe in it, but does he make enough contact to get to the power? That's the question. I'm going to middle on him. I'm more willing to buy in than I am on a Colas, but not to like the Beatty level, so I'm very 50-50 on the fence with Matt Mervis right now.
I'm in the same boat. I'm just not sure where to go with him. And what do the Cubs actually think about him? I think that's a big question. It's like, how do they value him internally? And I don't have the answer to that question. Everything that he did in 2022 as a 24-year-old signified that he should have been up and playing in the majors in 2023. He did. He got a little bit of time, and he was still pretty decent in AAA last year. He had a 399 OBP, a 282 average, and 22 homers in 100 games. So while it wasn't the elite 2022 season, it was still a really good AAA season for him. And I think it's important to remember that the growth isn't linear here, that we're talking about somebody who was an undrafted free agent in 2020 out of Duke. So that's important to think about, like, how far Mervis has come. But I will say that I am not overly in on him. The move to get Michael Busch, I won't say it was the nail in the coffin for Matt Mervis, but I do think that it was telling a little bit of how they value him. So that's from that standpoint, like you go out, you lock up a guy that can play first, and you also have several others on the team like Patrick Wisdom if they need. I'll be curious to see like how this all shakes out because they also have a Hayden McGeary who had a really good season last year. Might have been better than Matt Mervis's minor league season, honestly. I don't know. I'm a little bit at a loss with Matt Mervis. Obviously, want him to excel. I want to see him up and doing well. But I don't know how much he plays this year. I really don't, and that's the concerning aspect.
Yeah, no, as a first base DH-only profile, he's not terrible at in the field, but probably would be a little below average overall. So you need that to really carry him, and the bat has not. The power's been there. Your metrics would be fine, but if you're not performing, it's especially with the other guys on this roster and Bush in the fold now. Yeah, I think he spends more time at AAA this year than he does with the Major League team. So, again, not fully out, but I don't know if I want to buy either. I can wait and see. Let's see how this year goes. But another NL Central post-type guy here, Garrett Mitchell, who's had two stints with the big club, 2022-2023, both in the 70 plate appearance range, overall 141 plate appearances, 5 home runs, 9 steals. Like, he probably has the best stats out of all these guys we've talked about so far. 278, 343, 452 slash line, but also incredibly high strikeout rate, 38.3% so far in the major leagues. You know, whiff rate last year was 39.7%, well below league average contact rates, both overall and in the zone. I mean, it's still a fun profile. He's a good defender. He's a plus or better runner. Has that, you know, raw power, though, that didn't really show up last year. That was so weird. He had 10% barrel rate, you know, small sample size, only 86.7 mile an hour average EV. Hard hit rate's been around 40%, give or take, in the major league. So, like, he's got some of those fun raw tools, but there's always been that, you know, strikeouts have held him back. He had the hitch in the swing, hits way too many balls on the ground, which actually, wow, in the minor leagues at least, but in the major leagues, he's actually been around 40% ground ball rate, which is very surprising. But I don't know, like, this, it's a very hot and cold profile here, Chris. I'm still willing to buy in because, again, he hasn't been bad, though he is coming off injury, but there's still some tools I like there. So I think I'm willing to buy in. He's probably one of the higher buys for me out of this, all these guys we talked about.
Yeah, he's interesting because one of the biggest issues is that he just can't stay healthy at all.
Yeah.
So he's not on the field often enough to ever get in a groove. He does have tools. There's no denying that Garrett Mitchell is and can be like completely tooled out from the glove. He's obviously got a strong glove in center field and he moves well. He runs extremely well and he's got raw power. He doesn't exhibit it in game, but like Garrett Mitchell can put up some really good like BP sessions, which yep. make him fun to watch. You mentioned the flaws in the profile, and I think the ground ball rates are obviously an issue, but the biggest concern for me is just the injuries and the ability to stay on the field and play every day. You look at his track record, he was drafted in 2020. So obviously didn't play in 2020. In 2021, he got a total of 64 games. 2022, it's a little bit more. He moved up from AA, AAA, and even got some time in the majors, but it still wasn't consistent playing time at all. You look, and off the top of my head, just doing the math from the levels on Fangraphs, he probably got about 250 plate appearances. And then last year, he got 100 plate appearances. So I think the larger looming issue is that he gets a 20 grade for health. And so that's in itself an issue. I do think that he gets the benefit of the doubt because he is going to play when he's healthy because of the value that he brings in the field. Yep. Milwaukee's in an interesting situation, and they have a lot of outfielders. They've got a lot of talent, and there's more on the way. But I still believe that Mitchell's going to get every crack and every chance to play on this team. So I think it's an interesting buy, knowing the expectations, knowing that, yeah, he's not going to be an elite hitter. He's not going to be an elite fantasy asset, which is fine. But I do think that Mitchell can provide some speed, hopefully some decent average, and maybe he gets to some pop. So I'm intrigued to see what he can do. I think he just needs a healthy season, which we haven't seen yet from him.
Yeah, and do we ever see it? I mean, I love that you said 20 grade for health. That's yeah. Can you imagine they started putting, you know, that was another tool they had, all these Baseball America fan graphs, everything, they started adding in grades for durability. That'd be wild. But yeah, he would rank definitely on the lower end, 30 grade, probably best case scenario for him right now. And yeah, I do hope that he does stay healthy, at least for this year. We'll see what he can do over, you know, an extended period of time with the Brewers, because I've always been a Garrett Mitchell guy. I liked him when he was at UCLA. I think I actually had him 1-1 in it was either 1-1 or I had him at least like top three in my FYPD. That was for sure. Because that was the, using the Torque draft, right? If I recall correctly. Or no?
Yeah.
No. Yeah, Torque drafts. Yeah, I think my top three were him, Torque, obviously, and probably Austin Martin. I don't know. I think I did drop Austin Martin in my rankings. But anyway, different story for a different day. But yeah, I've always been a Mitchell guy. And I think there's still like a fantasy-friendly profile there. Probably lower average. Like the contact skills are a concern. Higher, obviously, higher K weight, whiff weight, everything. So maybe only a 240 guy, but could put up some decent power speed if given that chance. So we'll see. A couple of San Francisco Giants are next on the list here. And I got to be honest, I'm not really in on either of these guys. Let's start with, we got Marco Luciano, Luis Matos. We'll start with Matos. The thing with Matos, when he was a prospect, and he got fairly high in prospect rankings too. Like I'm pretty sure I had him top 25 at one point. He was always a good contact hitter, good approach, solid speed. But the power was always a question mark. And that's, he's basically turned into kind of what we thought he might turn into. So it's weird that maybe why do we rank him so high? Because the power was an issue. And last year, he had 197 batted balls. Barrel rate of 2%. He barreled up four balls. EV was 87.1. Hard hit rate 31%. You know, fared very well. Contact rates were above average. K rate better than average. Same with the whiff rate, chase rate, etc. But didn't provide any power and wasn't even running that much either. He only had three steals. I don't know is he just going to be a kind of like a fourth outfielder type, Chris? He's still only 22 years old, but I just don't see a lot of intrigue here, especially for fantasy.
Yeah, I'm actually buying in on Matos. He's done some things and completely transformed his body this offseason. He's one of those guys that I was like really in on as a prospect. I was like so enamored with.
Yeah, same.
And he is being talked about as the starting left fielder. So like this is directly from like the manager. They plan on starting Matos in left field this year. Matos can get to some pop. I think that he's got some intriguing speed. And while he hasn't really lived up to much hype at all to this point, I think that he's a pretty interesting buy for me because I do think there's just way more juice in the tank than what we've seen. And that vote of confidence that they want him to be the starting left fielder to begin the season speaks a lot of volume to me. And then you look under the hood at what he did last year in the minors. It's really good data. Like he was insanely good. Like he made some major strides. The dude in the minors had an 86% contact rate, a 92% zone contact rate. And his 90th percentile EV was near 105. From that standpoint, I think there's a lot to like here. Like he was always billed as like a very high grade hitter. There was sevens on the hit tool. And even in the majors, like I think that showed. He struck out just 13% of the time as a 21-year-old in the majors last year. The contact rates, all really good. Those minor league contact rates were absurdly good. Like those are like, and those easily represent 70 grade hit tools. And in the majors, he made 92% zone contact and 85% overall. So if we see him get to some pop, if he can hit 15 to 20 home runs and he may steal you 10 bags, I think Luis Matos is a really good buy. Reminds me a little bit of like the Alec Thomas like process. Just thinking of that name, as I said it earlier, if you heard.
Dude, I love, again, it's weird how we sync up sometimes. I literally had pulled up Alex Thomas. I was like, feels similar.
Yeah. So
I love that you went there as well.
Yeah. I think that there's an opportunity, and Alex Thomas is a good one too to discuss, just the ball on the ground too much, but the ground ball is not an issue for Luis Matos. So I think I might be investing in Luis Matos more so than I am Marco Feliciano right now, who, while there's big power, he certainly does not have the hit tool. He put up some insanely high strikeout rates last year. They got worse at each level 30% in Double A, 36% in Triple A, and 38% in the majors. That just, it can't work. Like, there's no way to make it work. He's like the polar opposite of Luis Matos in the minors, 65% contact rate. That's borderline like unusable. The good thing is that he does hit the ball hard. He had a 109 mile an hour ninth percentile, which is arguably like 65, 70 grade power, and a 93 mile an hour average EV. So those numbers are pretty absurd. But man, I don't know. Luciano is really tough for me.
Yeah. And he has a really interesting savant page. Again, it was 45 plate appearances, so very small sample size. But out of his 22 batted balls, he had a 54.5% hard hit. I think that's 12 out of his 22 were hard hit, but zero barrels because his average launch angle was negative 5.1 degrees. That's not good. His ground ball rate was 54.5%. Zone contact was below 70%. Whiff rate was 45%. Again, small sample size. And a lot of that was whiffing in zone as well because he actually chased at a better than league average rate. So a lot of in zone whiff is not good ever. And yeah, there's power there. Like, we know that. We've seen that. We've seen it firsthand on the AFL a couple years ago. Over a full year, could he hit 25 home runs? Sure. But that's probably coming with like 230 average and no speed. Maybe gives you a rogue steal here and there. That's the part of his game that was there in the low minors, but fizzled out pretty quickly. So at this point, he's just empty power and I think hurts you more than he helps you at this point. I don't know what excitement he brings to the table for your fantasy team. You can find cheap power easily and at a cheaper cost. I think he still has a little bit of that prospect allure. That name still carries some weight. But yeah, I was fading him when he was being ranked top 10 overall in prospect rankings. And yeah, I ranked him high myself, but I was just fading when everyone else was buying, and I'm still fading. And I don't want really anything to do with Marco Luciano right now. And so unless he was free in a deep league, I'm pretty much out here. Let's end with one more name here. Jonathan Aranda, who I'm pretty sure I dubbed like the American League Michael Bush, and still feel that way about him. Because here we are entering 2024, and what is his role for this Tampa Bay team? And even, obviously, he didn't play shortstop, but just looking at their infield in general, obviously, they still get low at second base. They just acquired Jose Caballero to play some shortstop. They got Isak Paredes, Yandy Diaz. I don't know where Aranda fits in, and at this point, it looks like he might be in a strong set platoon at DH. I've heard that bantered about who he'd be platooning with. I'm not quite sure. But maybe this actually could be the year we see some consistent in Jonathan Aranda because we haven't seen that. He's had 190 play appearances over two seasons, just sporadic time here and there. And granted, hasn't really done much with that time, but you hit the ball hard. 44.6% hard hit rate in his career. Did strike out 30% of the time last year, but also walked 12.5%, which is encouraging to see. So I still like the bat a little bit here. Another guy with a higher ground ball rate, that's an issue there too. But I think there's still solid power. Could be like a 25 homer bat over a full year. I think that he could hit for at least an average that won't kill you. Maybe like 250 or so. Contact rates a little below average, but not terrible. Again, not super high whiff rates either. So probably like a 240, 250 hitter, but maybe he still has something in the tank here. And maybe this is the year, Chris. Do you think it is? Are you willing to buy right now?
I think so. He absolutely mashed in AAA last year. He looked incredible the several times that I saw him. He makes contact. He hits the ball really hard. He doesn't chase often. He does everything you want to see to a hitter. He's not going to provide any speed, but he's going to play well in an OBP league. I think he's going to give you a fine enough average. I know the strikeout rate was a lot higher in the majors last year, but inconsistent playing time. He hit 27 home runs between AAA and the majors. I think there's a lot to if he can find the at-bats, and I hope that the Rays can find him an opportunity. They've made a lot of interesting trades. You have no clue really how this lineup is going to shake out. You can pretty much rest assured that Randy Arozarena is going to play every day and Yandy Diaz plays every day. Other than that, they're going to pick and choose their spots with most of these guys. If Aranda is on the strong side of platoon, if he can give me 450 plate appearances, and I think there's some really good opportunity here for Jonathan Aranda to have a really good year, which does make him a good buy in that sense.
Yeah, and who knows how many games Brendan Lau is going to play. This is a guy that hasn't played a ton of games recently. He missed over 50 games last year, almost 100 games missed in 2022. Really, his only year where he exceeded 500 plate appearances was in 2021. Outside of that, it's been very sporadic playing time and pretty sporadic performance as well the last couple of years. So I don't know where Aranda would even fit in the field. He's not a good defender. He's a bat first guy, but yeah, I still think there's some upside there. So I would look to buy low on Aranda. I think the price is pretty reasonable. There's a lot of prospect fatigue here, but that's the last name on the list here. But let's round it out real quick. Chris, out of all the names you talked about, you have to pick three. Who are your top three guys to buy low on out of these names we talked about today?
Brett Beatty is definitely one. Luis Matos, and I guess Jonathan Aranda.
I'm going to go slightly different. I'm going to go Beatty, Garrett Mitchell, and Jonathan Aranda. Though I do still like Matos a little bit too. So a lot of fun names on this list. Hopefully some of these guys will. I feel we'll probably figure out what some of these guys are this year. Beatty looks like he'll get a chance. Can he turn it around? Can Vargas get back in the lineup? Can Aranda finally get that shot? Can Mitchell squeeze his way into that crowded outfield once again? So I think this will be a pretty telling year for a lot of these guys, and maybe we'll have that more definitive thoughts on them. All right, are they going to work out as fantasy guys, or are they going to be guys that just fizzle out and never to be heard from again? But that is going to wrap us up. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in again this episode. We hope you enjoyed it. We are back with three more episodes next week. Again, we're doing three episodes all the way up through the season. Check out RotoBall or use that code TOOLSHED to get 10% off any premium package. And we will be back with you again next week. But until then, everyone take care.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.